Good morning, New Mexico. Welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting from the Santa Fe Baking Company, streaming on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, thanks to Dotfoil Computer Services, and we're at facebook.com/radiocafe. Later on in the program, we're going to be talking about Seriously Funny, which is not only a wonderful series on KSFR, but it's also an event that's happening on Tuesday of next week. And we're going to be talking to the great folks from Meow Wolf Artist Collective. I'm very happy now to welcome Argus McCallum. He is founding member and artistic director of Teatro Paraguas, which is presenting La Vida es Sueño, Life is a Dream by Pedro Calderón de la Barca. And that is happening at Warehouse 21 this Friday and Saturday, July 9th and 10th at 7:30 in the evening, and Sunday, July 11th at 2 p.m. And actors Kieran Sequoia and Jason Jaramillo are here. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello.
So, La Vida es Sueño, Life is a Dream. It's a Spanish Golden Age drama, and of course the reason you're presenting it is because that's one of the stories that's being told. It's one of the operas in this year's Santa Fe Opera.
That's correct. Nat Eek, who's a regent professor emeritus from University of Oklahoma, and he was also the artistic director of the Southwest Repertory Company that performed here in Santa Fe in the late 80s and early 90s, came to me with the idea of actually doing a staged reading of La Vida es Sueño so that the public could have a chance to hear the full play before the opera this summer. And the opera is a world premiere, but the play, of course, in the play form, there's more detail, more action. And so sort of to prepare the people, they could, the audience for the opera, they could hear the full play.
And now it's interesting, when you do an opera, I guess you can't put in as much as you can in a play, because there have to... It has to be sung. That just takes more time.
That's correct. The opera is by Louis Spratlin, and the librettist is James Marinus. And I did have the privilege of reading the libretto. It's quite condensed from the actual text, but it's a very beautifully done rendition of the play.
Well, I went to part of a rehearsal the other night, and it really feels like Shakespeare.
Well, yes. In a sense, Calderón is the Shakespeare of the Spanish Golden Age. He was a contemporary of Shakespeare. He was born in 1600. He wrote his first play when he was 13, called The Great Bear. He studied law at the Jesuit College, but playwriting was his love. At the age of 28, he became the director of the court theater of Philip IV, and when he was 35, he took over the new position of director of Buen Retiro, which was a very lavish, splendid, luxuriant theater. Actually, it was outdoor theater. It included a lake sometime, and an island. Sometimes the actors performed on the island, and the courtiers sat in gondolas watching. They also had a big wall that would part, and you could see behind, you could see nymphs cavorting on the waves, or
nymphs
battles.
Nymphs cavorting on the waves?
Yeah. battle scenes, naval battle scenes. It was, theater was a big thing for Philip IV, and in a way, you know, the whole Spanish Empire was still going, but it had kind of peaked with the Spanish Armada in 1587. So, the legacy of Philip IV was he supported the arts and particularly theater. So through his efforts, we have the Spanish Golden Age coming down. And there are a lot of similarities between the Elizabethan theater and the Spanish Golden Age. One exception, though, was that the Spanish theater allowed women to play women, which...
Nice.
Yeah. So.
One of the things that is nice, I think, for us, too, is that when we see a play like this, it's translated into contemporary English, so it's a vocabulary that we can understand, which Elizabethan English is not always.
That's correct. I think the Spanish is more understandable. It hasn't gone through the transformation that Shakespeare's
is that right?
has. But It's very beautifully written in the classic Spanish, and we're very privileged to have Catherine Hoffman's translation. It's very faithful to the meter and the meaning of the original.
It's very, very poetic and dramatic in the most beautiful way.
Yes, I think so. This is the third time I've worked on a production of Life is a Dream, and I hope to be able to do so many more times.
Is that right? So this was not new to you before the Spanish, the Santa Fe Opera?
No, I played Clarín in 1971, and I played Clotaldo, the Prime Minister, in 2003 with Teatro Nuevo México when they did the Carlos Rivera version called Sueño.
So tell us a little bit, just kind of set up the story for us so that our listeners who maybe didn't hear the opera series or didn't hear that one can get a sense of what this story is about.
Well, the basic plot is the king, Basilio, at the birth of his son, discovers by reading the stars that his son is going to be a merciless tyrant and be very bad, cause chaos and murder and mayhem. So he locks his son up in a mountain fortress where his son, Segismundo, played by Angelo Jaramillo, doesn't see anyone except for Clotaldo, the prime minister. But under pressure from his niece and nephew, who Jason plays the nephew from Moscow, this whole thing takes place in Poland. The king is forced to either abdicate, but he decides to bring his son back to see if perhaps free will might triumph over fate. The fate
was merciless tyrant.
Yeah. And so in a drug-induced sleep, Segismundo was brought to court. And, of course, his first time seeing other people, and he can't believe his, what he's seeing, such opulence and beauty. But he does run amok. So he's drugged once again and sent back to the mountain. And that's the basic plot. I won't give away what happens after that. There are many subplots. Kieran is playing Rosaura, who has come from Moscow chasing Astolfo, who has wronged her. So
terribly. It's wronged me terribly.
Well, I was thinking in this play, of course, there are these great themes of fate and tragedy and free will and all these things, but I mean, looked at just in a kind of common sense way, it's really kind of a misuse of astrology. I mean, he's basically taken somebody who was told at birth that they're going to be a merciless tyrant and turned them into a merciless tyrant by locking them up in a cage for their whole entire childhood.
Yeah. Well, that's the point at the end of the play. We do, that does come out. And so, in a sense, King Basilio is too smart by half. And it's a question of avoiding fate. One usually lets fate do what it does by trying to avoid it. So,
which is something we have back to the Greeks and probably before that.
Yeah, one of the common themes of mankind.
So tell us more, Kieran, about your character.
Oh, Rosaura. I've fallen quite head over heels with Rosaura. I've always really liked classical texts and Shakespeare, and Calderón has done, he's just wonderful. I mean, I think that I prefer Calderón to Shakespeare after doing this show. The characters that he writes for women are outstanding. Rosaura is a fully present woman with desires and needs and force and tyranny and wonderful things. She's kind of a fusion of all the characters I've ever wanted to play in Shakespeare. And her interaction with other characters and just sort of her presence and her conviction with which she does things makes me feel more excited about my day-to-day life. I always wonder, I wish I could be more like Rosaura. What would Rosaura do? So I feel very privileged to play this, and I'm very upset, actually, that we're only doing a staged reading. So a goal of mine with Paraguas, we'll see one day, is I'd like to do a full production of La Vida es Sueño. It's fantastic. The writing, like you said, is just absolutely wonderful. So I'm very pleased to be playing Rosaura.
Jason Jaramillo,
yes.
Your character, tell us about him.
Astolfo.
Everybody laughs. And they're rubbing their hands together.
Yes, yes, yes. You know, Astolfo is the devil in disguise. He is a man of privilege. He is a man of power. He is a body of the state, if you will. He is used to getting his way. And he just might this time.
And ladies and gentlemen, you'll have to go see how it works out. So do you consider that part a villain part?
You know, I think we were all destined in one way or another to achieve the things that we were set up for in life. Now, whether those things are bad or good, who am I to say? But I think...
Are you playing the part right now?
No. I've been very analytical when it comes to Astolfo. And I think under the right direction and having foregone those things that could have held me back in the past, I'm looking towards the future, towards greater things.
Treachery never goes out of style.
Definitely
never.
Not.
So this is a play that... is in Spanish. Of course, we're hearing it translated into English, and it's you often do bilingual theater at Teatro Baraguas. Is there going to be any kind of Spanish in it at all? Or are you going to throw it in just to have people hear what it sounds like?
I wish we could, but we're kind of constrained by holding the books and et cetera. The most famous line in the text is "La vida es sueño, y los sueños sueños son." Life is a dream, and the dreams themselves are dreams. But in Spanish, actually, the second line also means dreams are the dreams of dreams.
Mm-hmm.
So you get into these layers and layers of impermanence, and Segismundo's finally comes to the point of view that the best thing to do is to obrar bien. To act well in life, because we never know if we are awake or sleeping. And the only way to kind of have any control over the outcome is to do as best as one can in life.
I was thinking while I was watching it the other night that the contemporary film expression of that idea is The Matrix.
Mm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's true. When we were talking about La Vida Sueño, it's something that comes up, I mean, all the time. And I think Calderon, and I think it's considered in Midsummer's Night Dream as well, is what is this reality? What are we really experiencing? Do we really have any concept of what's going on? How can we be sure that what's happening is really happening? So yeah, The Matrix, definitely. I mean, I hate to compare The Matrix to Calderon, but...
No, the same themes come up over and over again,
yeah.
And people forget that they're centuries old and that we've been revisiting these questions through art in so many different ways.
It makes me excited that someone's still considering that, you know, even in a big Hollywood blockbuster sense. So
it's also a very interesting twist on fate itself,
mm-hmm.
because if you know that something is going to happen, well, you can make that happen,
mm-hmm.
or you can make it not happen, or you can make whatever you want happen. But if you really don't know what's happening, if you think you're just going through life, how do you have control over that? It's almost as if fate is grabbing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and there's always that question of interaction with fate. So those who, you know, it's kind of an American thing to think that there's no fate at all. You make your own life. It's the American dream. You can be absolutely anything. And that's just clearly not true.
Mm-mm.
But then the opposite extreme is we have no free will whatsoever. It's just all going to happen and it's all destined. So,
yeah, I like that in this play. I was very excited to see that a lot of times in classical texts, it's like when something is foretold, it always happens, you know, where there's some jig up and something changes, but then in the end, it still happens. And in this text, that's not what happens. So I'm very excited to see that theme of fate has been changed. And I think that's wonderful because people, yeah, especially in this country, I think either want total freedom or want it just set forward, and that fate changes based on action and based on interpretation and what you expect of people. People will become what you expect of them.
Exactly.
So you just change your expectations and the whole outcome is completely different.
Now, a staged reading is an event where people show up at Teatro Paraguas or wherever, and people, the actors are holding the book they're reading from the book, but it's more than that. I mean, you guys are acting and walking around the stage as well.
Mm-hmm. That's correct. We've got a stage set. We've got the props. We have the swords. And
you have the swords?
Yeah.
We have swords.
Yeah, we do.
I'm so excited.
That's the main thing.
They're gilded.
So, I mean, there are various ways that stage readings can be done. One is behind music stands. But this play is so moving, and it's like an opera, like a ballet. It's got big, sweeping movements and motions. So
it's very sensual, this play.
Very. So we just felt that very important to get on our feet and let the characters interact that way.
And are you in costume?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're very lucky to have costumes from the Arden Players and from Theater Work. Not totally period pieces, but, you know, close enough for a stage reading.
Yeah.
And we're talking about La Vida es Sueño, Life is a Dream, which is happening this coming weekend at Warehouse 21. So let's talk about each one of you. Argos, you founded Teatro Paraguas some time ago.
We started up in 2004.
2004.
With a poetic performance of, a dramatic performance of the poetry of Pablo Neruda, who was born in 1904, so it was 100 years. Crawford McCallum, my father, who was playing the King Basilio in this, in our stage reading, called me up one day and said, hey, let's read some poems. It's going to be Pablo's 100th birthday. So we did. I said, well, let me call some actor friends. And they said, well, let's just don't read the poems. Let's see what we can do. Dance, music, sound. Let's see. Because Pablo's plays are, his poems are very narrative, very colorful. So that's where we started. We've done about 22 productions since then. Started off at El Museo. We're very lucky now to have our own little studio theater out in Home Depot, 47 seats.
Yes.
So,
it's a terrific space. It's the last thing you expect. It's in a little kind of office park, and there is a theater, and you walk in, and it's terrific.
Right. Our next door neighbor is Chef Link. They do all kinds of restaurant supply and repair. So.
Now, Kieran, you've been acting since you were a little kid.
Yep. It's what I've always wanted to do, actually. And I was scouted when I was 3 years old by Disney.
No.
Yes. And my mom took me to the audition and was like, I'm having nothing to do with this. I will not have a daughter who's a little diva. So I was taken off acting until I relentlessly bothered my mother until I was 11 again. So wow. I started professionally acting when I was 11 in Vancouver. And I moved here when I was 17 to go to the College of Santa Fe. And I met Argos at that time. He scooped me up out of building a set and
he
said,
scouted you.
Well, I don't know. It's truthfully because I was always not building things in practicum. So I was always talking, which I always do. But I talked to the right person this time, apparently. And the first time I worked with Teatro Paraguas was on the Rachel Corey readings. And I continued my involvement and have been extremely fortunate to keep working on things. And I now sit on Teatro Paraguas' board as the vice president, which is kind of incredible. But Teatro Paraguas has always been truthfully, my favorite theater to work with. And I'm very dedicated to socially relevant and politically relevant theater in Santa Fe, art kind of with a purpose. So throughout my time in Santa Fe, I've worked with Teatro Paraguas and worked in film and worked in television and worked out of Santa Fe and come back.
And now you're leaving us.
I am. Not forever, but I'm planning to go to New York in August. And I'm working with a theater company there called the 52nd Street Project, which is in Hell's Kitchen. They've been gracious enough to try me out until December, and we'll see what happens from there. So the goal of that is to get my producing chops up and make contacts and, of course, act in New York. And I'd like to come back with resources and with more skills to work in Santa Fe and to work with my fellow artists and people that I love. So I'm very excited.
Jason Jaramillo, have you been acting since you were 3 years old also?
Not 3 years old, no. It is kind of a funny story, though. We were at church one Sunday, and the priest said something like, and let the children do as I do. So, sitting next to my mother, I ran out of the pew, went up to the altar, and you know how the priest, he does things with his arms and signs and stuff like that. I was standing right behind him, going up and down, my arms this way, my arms that way.
That is hilarious. You took him, just... innocently.
Yeah.
You took him at his word.
Yeah.
Did you think it was funny?
Well, when I first heard about the story, I think I was too young to think it was funny.
That's hilarious. And so you started acting in school?
I did. I went to St. Mike's for 3 years during middle school. And the first time I had a role, I was a detective in Home Sweet Homicide.
Nice.
And I started with Tata Paraguas about 3 years ago. I volunteered one afternoon at the El Museo. They were doing Las Poetisas Amigas, Gracias a la Vida.
Mm, yeah.
And I was sweeping the stage and setting up chairs. And before I know it, I'm on stage with them, backstage with them, and now on the radio.
And so are you doing the bilingual part of it too, Spanish and English?
I have done bilingual with them. We've done some poetry in Albuquerque. We did Sucio's Frog, the Ballad of Sucio's
That's
Frog,
right.
at the NHCC.
Which was a wonderful example of real
incredible.
Bilingual theater that even if you don't really speak any Spanish, you can get it.
Well, you know, the thing about Sucio's Frog, it was kind of that moch thing, you know, that we've got going in New Mexico. So, you know, it's kind of like Spanish. It's kind of like English. It ain't quite Spanglish. It's more like New Mexican moch.
Right.
It's mocha.
Mocha. Right.
So La Vida y Sueño is opening this Friday, the 9th of July. It's Friday, Saturday at 7:30, and then Sunday at Sunday, July 11th at 2 o'clock. It's free, but donations are gratefully accepted, and the number for more information is 424-1601. You can also go to teatroparaguas.org, and there will be a link on my website as well. And not to forget to mention this, there's a cocktail party on July 10th, which is Saturday, from 5 to 7 at Bert's Taqueria, which is at 416 Agua Fria, and that's good food.
It's wonderful food. Chef Fernando Olea is a partner with one of our board members, and he's a fantastic chef. He is the personal chef to Vicente Fox, and he was just recently named one of the top three chefs in America and was presented with an award by Michelle Obama, and he's just right down the street.
Amazing.
Yeah, so there's a small donation that you can pay at the door for that event, and we would love to have you. And the idea is to promote new patrons of Teatro Paraguas and to have the public meet our board members and our actors and enjoy some good food and cocktails before the show. So please come out and join us.
And it's wonderful to have all three of you here. Argus McCallum, who is the founding member and artistic director of Teatro Paraguas, and Kieran Sequoia and Jason Jaramillo.
Thank you
very much.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte.
We're going to take a break. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned to KSFR. I'm delighted now to welcome Ron Bloomberg, Debriana Mancini, and Michelle Schneider. They are all involved with Seriously Funny, which is both a radio show that airs here on KSFR and an event which is happening this coming Tuesday, the 13th of July at the Santa Fe Playhouse. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen.
Hello.
Thank
Hi.
You.
So, Seriously Funny, we are having, and I'm actually going to be involved with it too, but all of you particularly are going to be involved in something which looks like great fun, which is a live recording of an episode of Seriously Funny at the Santa Fe Playhouse on Tuesday night. What's involved with doing something live as opposed to in the control room?
We'll find out. Actually, the station came up with the idea that perhaps we should try doing it in front of a live audience, kind of like old-time radio, kind of like Benny did and Fred Allen and so forth. So we're going to give it a shot at the Santa Fe Playhouse. And, you know, it only seats 99. They only have 99 seats. So those of you who want to support KSFR and see, I think, a very exciting, fun evening, should call the station and order tickets.
428-1379.
Yeah.
So Seriously Funny, tell us about some of the characters. What are the characters that the two of you play?
I play Mona. She's kind of a neurotic, dark, ridiculous, funny character. She's been, you know, jilted by men, as you might imagine. But she also stalks them. She's a lovely person.
I can't imagine why she's been jilted.
Well, she's got a, you know, kind of an edge to her, a little dark, but she's fun. I love her, you know, and as I should. I'm her.
You are her. Before we get into Michelle's part, let me just say we're putting a new wrinkle in this one. By the way, this will be the fifth episode of Seriously Funny, and we're happy that it's been received so well. In this fifth one, we're doing a show within a show. We've come up with an idea to do a parody of the Real Housewives of New Jersey and the Real Housewives of New York. We're doing the Real Housewives of Santa Fe.
Uh-oh.
And Michelle will be playing one of the Real Housewives. And you can tell her about that.
Yes, I'm Rosalind. I am a Jewish woman from New York who moved here to Santa Fe, whose husband worked for Goldman Sachs. And now enjoying the good life here in our fine little city. It's a real stretch for me.
Why? Because you were born in...
Because I'm Jewish from New York and my husband's in finance, but not Goldman Sachs.
Yeah.
So the episodes on Seriously Funny, do you have to have heard the early ones in order to know what's going on?
It would help, but we do a recap before each show so that we bring them up to speed. And by the way, during this week, there'll be a Best of Seriously Funny that will run. So the audience is kind of hipped as to what's happening. Yeah.
So, Ron Bloomberg, you just can't stay away from comedy writing.
It may be tragedy for all I know, but yes. it's my childhood. What can I tell you? It was, that's what happened. I think I told you that once. Terrible childhood.
Tell us again.
Well, do you have about an hour and a half?
No, we got about 15 minutes.
Oh, okay.
Well, the condensed version, Ron.
Yeah, right. I guess I thought the station could use a little comedy, and we're trying. So that's what we're putting on.
That's what you're going to tell us about your childhood?
My childhood was, I come from English royalty, and it was just, terrible. That's about it.
English royalty that had to escape from the pogroms?
Yes. It was a very interesting route. But let me talk about our cast, which is really the meat of this whole thing. We've got 12 of the most accomplished actors in Santa Fe. Debriana Mancini, this lady sitting over here to my right, was in Crazy Heart, had a wonderful scene with Jeff Bridges, is a very accomplished actress, and we're delighted to have her with us.
I paid him to say that.
Yes, but not enough. We've got Liam Lockhart, who you know, and Annie Goodwin, and Elena Zachary, and Tom and Lori Romero, and just terrific, terrific people.
And Robin.
And Robin Reed, of course, yeah. And maybe, we're negotiating with her, but maybe we can have this young lady sitting here.
Wow.
Yes.
What? Who, me?
Yes, you. We're negotiating with her people. Because that night, before we do the live recording, we're going to be putting on a variety show. And each of these actors, very accomplished actors, will be doing a few minutes of whatever it is they want to do. Some will be singing. Some will be reading, hopefully, very witty poetry. Some will be doing sketches. And if we can get Mary Charlotte on board, we're asking her to come out and do a few minutes. And that would be terrific.
Well, you can talk to my people. There are three of them. Each of them has four legs and weighs about 18 pounds.
Oh, I see. Yeah,
and they have a one-word vocabulary.
Yeah. Woof.
That's it.
There you go.
I'll have our dog whisperer call.
Debriana, you were in Crazy Heart with Jeff Bridges.
I was.
Well, tell us about your part.
Oh, I was trying to pick up Jeff at Evangelos, which is the first and only time I've ever set foot in Evangelos in the 20-something years I've been here. But I enjoyed him a great deal. He's a lovely, lovely man. Everyone on the set was just lovely. And actually, Evangelos is, it's a nice place.
Was his part just like he was in The Big Lebowski?
I don't know. I think Jeff crafted a character that was specific for Crazy Heart.
I'm just kidding.
Yeah, he's just a great actor. No, he's not always like a Lebowski. Yeah, he was. It was so incredible to watch him work. And when you're working with someone who's superior to you, I think they elevate everyone around you. And I think that's what he did to the entire cast and crew.
I think what was most impressive was that First of all, she got the scene alone with Jeff Bridges. And as you know, Mary Shirley, when they come in to shoot here in New Mexico, most of the time, all the principal roles are filled. And so the actors here, you know, get a line or two or extras or so forth. But Debriana is so accomplished that they picked her to do this very important scene with Jeff Bridges. And I personally think that's why he won the Academy Award. I don't know what other reason it could have been.
Yes, I would agree with that. You made him look good.
Thank you.
And are you trying to continue in film? Is that one of your goals right now?
Yeah, well, it's been my career, quote unquote, for the last 20 some odd years, really. And
more film than theater?
Well, I have a pretty long theater resume in Santa Fe for, 15 years. I've produced and acted and toured and all over New Mexico in theater here, and was probably one of the first SAG actors in New Mexico, and been a member of SAG for many, many, many years. So yeah, I've been working.
Sure, don't tell her about the Bon Jovi video.
I just did an episode of In Plain Sight, which was my second episode there, and I work a bit. Yeah, I know, Ron.
What?
You're staring at me with
Bon
Jovi.
Give her one line about it. Come on.
Oh, in my younger days in New York, I did I think it was Bon Jovi's, maybe his second video. I played his girlfriend on a video called Only Lonely. So you can find it on YouTube, probably.
Excellent. The real you is coming out.
My long line history. Yeah, it was before right before he really, really got famous, and everybody on the set knew he was going to be huge. We all did.
You can just tell.
Yeah, you could totally see it. It was amazing. I remember having that conversation. And the other thing I'll never forget is the person who did my makeup on that set was named Holly Wood. She
Very
was a
nice.
Funny gal. Yeah. So anyway, that's sort of, I know that you that's dragged that out of me, Ron. Yeah.
Do you prefer doing film or theater?
Well, you know, each has their upsides and downsides. I love doing theater because you have a continuous line from beginning to end and an arc of a character that you do every night. And in film, you have specific moments, and it's just a much tinier place that you work in. In theater, you have to hit that back wall if it's 500-seat theater or 1,000-seat theater. And film, the audience is in your nostril, so you have to make everything you do tiny and specific. So it's a different medium, and I enjoy both of them.
And how is New Mexico's burgeoning film industry doing?
Oh, it's amazing, and we're all hoping it continues in the strength that it is at this point, because many, many people have gotten to work in a field that they never dreamed they could work in, whether they're crew or you know, background, or aspiring to be, you know, principles on something.
So all this stuff that we used to talk about regularly on the Radio Cafe, which is the film crew training programs and all that stuff, they've actually worked.
Oh my gosh, yes. I know countless people who have gotten to work on films that they never even imagined they could do that kind of work. So yeah, definitely. I see it.
You know what? This is an example of government programs that do their job and then sort of, you know, don't get credited, but
yeah.
I mean, this is a Bill Richardson initiative.
Yes, it is, and I hope whoever is our new governor continues in that vein. I mean, it's helped a lot of industries, and you kind of tend to forget what film does when they come in. They're a clean industry for the most part. They come in and they offer jobs to dry cleaners and caterers, and you know, people go out to eat in restaurants, and when their films are located here and they have crew from other places, hotels, it just is a huge support to the community in a lot of ways.
Now, Michelle, do you have a long acting career behind you as well?
No, I do have a musical career behind me, but my career actually started in Starbucks by the DeVargas Mall with Ron. He auditioned me for Benchwarmers a couple of years ago. So.
I have an office there in Starbucks. Booth 3.
It looks kind of like yours here, Mary Charlotte.
Yes, I like my office here.
And so I got to play an 85-year-old woman. And in Benchwarmers, and Ron, I've been working with him ever since, so he writes specific parts for me. It's been extremely exciting. I love the theater, but really, basically, my acting experience has burgeoned in Santa Fe.
Well, Michelle has what every comedic actor or actress must have, and that is comedic timing. So when I read her, and she had that, you know, I wanted to give her an opportunity to do it on stage, and she was terrific.
She's a terrific gal.
Thanks.
Most excellent. Ron, are you doing any acting at all these days?
Only right now.
No. What are you trying to say?
Yeah. Well, you know what I'm trying to say.
No, I don't. What are you trying to say?
Okay, I'm trying to say that, is this the real me? No. I'm rather depressed person. So, but here I'm, you know, sound like a normal human being almost.
He's Mona.
Right.
I'm his alter ego.
Yes. But getting back to Seriously Funny, if we may, for a minute. I do think the combination of the variety show and the live recording is a very exceptional evening. And I think people will really have a terrific fun time if they come.
Good. Well, this sounds like great fun. So it's happening on Tuesday, the 13th of July at the Santa Fe Playhouse. Seriously Funny, 12 amazing actors, the wonderful Ron Bloomberg variety show, food, beverages, and above all, it's a benefit for KSFR. So
absolutely.
If you're planning on giving your annual or semi-annual donation, this is the time to do it and get a wonderful night of theater and fun out of it.
Right, exactly. And I'm glad you mentioned that we're feeding them, which always helps. There will be also a cast party after the recording where they can mingle with the actors. Not too close, but, you know, get to know them. And
they have to go through my people first.
Your people.
Define mingle.
Yes, well, you define it, Debriana.
Mingle?
Yeah.
It's at least a 12-foot radius. In all directions, I might add.
Below.
Yeah.
But there will be audience participation, and some lucky person in the audience will actually be in the live recording of Seriously Funny.
Kind of like Bruce Springsteen. You never know, you might be Courtney Cox.
Yes.
Get pulled
and
out
on
of
that
audience.
Note, Ron Bloomberg, Michelle Schneider, and Debriana Mancini, it's great to have you all on the Radio Cafe, and we'll see you on Tuesday of next week.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mary.
I'm very happy now to welcome Sean DiIanni, Nicholas Chiarella, and Sarah Bradley. They are from the Meow Wolf Artist Group. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Hi.
Hi, thanks.
So we've been following Meow Wolf for its long and burgeoning life, as it is so far. And right now, you have an installation at a space on 2nd Street, and it's called Habitats. What's that about?
It's a collaborative installation. About 30 artists worked on it. We started working on it in March, so it's been a long, epic journey getting it done. And it's an installation of living spaces, basically.
So they're kind of living spaces and they're kind of art spaces. I mean, you, in theory, can sleep and live in them, but it's sort of pretty crazy.
Well, we have actually lived in, stayed, and, like, slept in them for a while. Nick, I think you've been spending the most time of any of us.
Yeah, and I don't necessarily that we would call them full-on living spaces, but you could definitely camp out for a good amount of time.
So what's interesting, and this has been, I think, pretty consistent in the work that Meow Wolf is doing, is that it's a kind of combination between people doing their own thing, but then doing it as a group. And sometimes it's hard to tell where one artist's work leaves off and the next one begins, which I guess is intentional.
Yeah, to some extent. I mean, and I think it's something that we like to happen, is when it all sort of coalesces into one thing. And this show, we sort of tried to do that by getting all of the ideas for these living spaces, which were going to be very personal expressions, and putting them all on the table, and then basically making a big list and sort of designing the show with, you know, the vision of 30 people in mind and figuring out how to sort of make a somewhat of a village out of these art installations that would coalesce into something, you know, that had an overall effect.
Right, to kind of create this sense that these weren't just created a week before the opening or a few days before the opening, but that we'd, you know, possibly had been there for years together and try to integrate the spaces in that sense.
So what are some of the actual concepts and realization of those concepts that are going into this series of habitats?
We had a number of ideas. We have a little swamp area that has a nice little mud hut in it and a witch hut. There's even a cave. There's actually two bird's nests in these loft spaces that we were able to clear out and make. It's probably one of the most we have different heights. We've actually managed to put a loft space within the space, which was a bit of a challenge considering how the way that the building is constructed. But there's a lot of different things.
Yeah, we wanted to break the space up vertically this time because a lot of the shows just end up, you know, naturally being on the ground floor. And this time we wanted to really move people up through, like, into the ceiling. So there's a loft where you go up into the ceiling, and then there's another, like, deck level at about 4 feet that you can go up on. And then under that, there's this whole world of tunnels and habitats and projections and mirrors and mud huts and shrines and things that you can explore like that. So it's a very, like, physically demanding show of the viewer.
It's not for somebody who's shy. You really have to go in and explore as much as possible and engage with it.
Crawl around, go up and down. Yeah, I went there with my dachshund, Horatio, so we did not get into all the spaces because he was a little bit timid about going, especially upwards. But as always, you use materials that are just gathered from wherever you can possibly find them, from junk shops to dumpsters to I don't know what.
Yeah, piles on the side of the road.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's it's really useful. I was able to find the material for my habitat kind of just piled along the side of the rail path. And so I didn't have to pay for anything but the screws to assemble it.
What were some of the materials that you used?
Someone had gutted their kitchen during a remodel, and instead of kind of taking it to the dump or doing something else with it, they just threw it in their backyard.
And not only did Nick find all those materials, he also hauled them back in a bicycle trailer to Meowulf.
Because of being on the bike path is the only way.
Yeah. And they're pretty nice. They're some pretty, really beautifully patinaed pieces of wood and stuff like that.
So what is the actual concept behind Nicholas, behind your piece?
I wanted to create a kind of a sense. Well, first of all, I guess I didn't know where I would build or what exactly I would build. So I have a space on the mid-level platforming, and that space had opened up, and there were already two structures. There was a hut made out of wood, and then there was a paper kind of igloo that had already been constructed. So I had thought about using fabric, and so it was kind of like, what neighborhood would I fit best in the show?
What about you, Sean?
I ended up I did a lot of the sort of planning and designing for the whole show and ended up taking a space sort of towards the end that hadn't been claimed yet. It's kind of like a bunk space that's up about 3 feet, and it's a small 3-foot by 6-foot sleeping space that ended up evolving into this sort of crib that has, you know, these really nice balusters that actually Nick found that look like the sides of a crib and all these little curtains. And I just wanted it to be really epically detailed and have a lot of little windows and views into it, and also be sort of trimmed out in a very, like, pretty way. Thinking about a lot, like, the aesthetic of a lot of the show kind of being you know, post-apocalyptic, for lack of a better term, and a little bit rough, that I had this sort of idea of sort of reacting to that, like, what if something happened where I really just needed to create something sort of beautiful and safe that had little punctures through it, and ended up using a lot of packing material as, like, glazing for windows and things like that. So mine just sort of evolved into this weird crib.
Sarah?
My space, I kind of had to continually refine my initial idea, but I ended up with an igloo shape that I covered in scales, or they almost look like feathers, actually. But they're made from the pages of telephone books, and I treated them with a sort of just a light metallic gold paint, so they have a little bit of a shimmer. And the thing that I really fell in love with working with those materials is that the structure actually has a bit of movement to it. When wind blows in, the feathers or scales will kind of ruffle a little bit. And it turned into this kind of weirdly animal form. So I also ended up making a little owl mask out of just wire, but then I covered it with newspaper as well, so it sort of fits into the aesthetic. And just one thing I'd like to say is just what I love about this show is how much the structures take on the character of people who created them. And I think actually both Nick and Sean's structures really do that well. And the more time you spend in them, the more time you spend just looking around, you really get the sense of the person.
So they're sort of little weird habitat self-portraits in a way.
Yeah, I think they kind of turn into that.
Yeah.
Probably unintentionally, mostly.
Yeah.
So these habitats can be viewed. People are invited to show up on Fridays and Saturdays from 5 to 9 through the 31st of July. And where are you located? You're on 2nd Street.
We're on 2nd Street. Our official address is 1800 2nd Street. But the best way to find us is by saying that we're on the corner of Hopewell and 2nd Street. There's a little light, traffic light there.
That's
and we're
right.
just on the corner there. It's kind of so across the street from Cloud Cliff.
Yeah, you turn into Hopewell and sort of walk in the little back door there. Mm-hmm. And everybody is welcome to come. And you also have some solo shows that are coming up.
Yeah, we've started doing, since we sort of stopped doing music shows at our space, we have kind of developed this little gallery or project space in what used to be the music space. And we're doing a rotating solo show project where artists get about 3 weeks or 2 or 3 weeks to make something, to work on a project in the space, and it can be anything that they want. It can be hanging paintings or doing an installation or curating a show. And then they have 3 weekends to display it. So the next one that we'll be having is going to be a show of work on paper by Nicholas Tull. And also he's going to be doing an installation in the space, and he's going to be cooking food for people with his new catering company called Poca Pasta Lipstick. And that's going to open, the Poca Pasta Lipstick Catering and Nicholas Tull Work on Paper show will open July 16th. And the opening will be from 5 to 10 p.m. And then that'll run for 3 weekends, Fridays and Saturdays, 5 to 9, like usual.
And we'll be sure to announce that when the time comes. This coming weekend also at the SOFA Expo, which is happening at the Santa Fe Convention Center, Meow Wolf is also doing an event called The Desert is an Ocean.
Yeah, this is something that SOFA asked us to do. They're having an after-hours party that's actually open to the public on the 10th. And we're
which
gonna,
is Saturday.
Which is a Saturday, yeah. Also, it's at 6 o'clock, goes till 10. And there'll be a number of different people contributing to the event. I think Moving People is going to do something. There'll be some jazz music and a DJ also. But we're contributing an inflatable soft sculpture installation that will actually inflate during the party and then create a space for people to hang out in and have fun in.
Most excellent. Well, it's all Meow Wolf's ongoing creativity. How can people find you on the web?
Our website is pretty simple. It's just www.meowwolf.com.
Meowwolf.com. Sean Gianni, Nicholas Chiarella, and Sarah Bradley, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're streaming live on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, thanks to Dotfoil Computer Services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can find us at facebook.com/radiocafe, and my email address is radiocafe@ksfr.org. Stay tuned for the BBC, then local news by KSFR's award-winning news team, and after that, jazz.